Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
All right, it's Carson Anderson, 97.1. Open lines, 248-539-9797. Tony's in Detroit and been patient. Hello, Tony.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up, Tony?
I just wanted to chump the city of Pittsburgh's weatherman and the city of Cleveland. And I guess champ the state of Michigan for putting on a pretty good fireworks. My father drove me and my family out to Pittsburgh. Actually, I drove. And we wanted to go see the fireworks in Pittsburgh. We get there, they canceled them due to the weather. And I'm like, well, we just drove through the storm, so it shouldn't be too bad. Let's stay. My dad said, well, we can catch the one in Cleveland. We drive all the way to Cleveland, get pulled over, get a speeding ticket in the midst of all everything. Get to Cleveland. Man, they had the worst fireworks display I've ever seen in my life. It was probably like 15 minutes. And it's just like, wow. A whole 4th of July, no food, just sandwiches for the road because we couldn't find anywhere to eat. But, yeah.
Wow.
Got to chump the city of Cleveland because they could have put out something way better than that.
So they had some, like, Timu.
The weather in Pittsburgh is terrible for that.
So Cleveland had some Timu fireworks show, and the Pittsburgh weatherman missed what it was going to happen, and they could have had the show in Pittsburgh, huh?
I told my dad, when we got pulled over, my wife told me, she said they're going to do it in Pittsburgh. I said, well, we got an hour. We should turn around. He said, well, no, Cleveland is on the way home, so let's go there. And the whole ride, I'm thinking, like, I don't want to spend my 4th of July in Cleveland, man.
Well, I mean, Tony, I got to be honest. With all respect, dude, it sounds like some questionable decisions made by you guys.
Yeah, we thought we were, man. We didn't have anything to do, so we had more fun in the car. I ain't
love
gonna
it.
Lie.
Okay,
had,
good.
I had my family in the car. We had fun, but...
Well, you got a story.
But, man. Yeah,
you got a story, if nothing else. And maybe you learn your lesson, right?
I gotta call these guys Monday.
All right, well, so Cleveland taking a stray here for a week fireworks show. 248-539-9797. Let's go to Mike in Dearborn. You're next. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys. I'd like to put in my champ and chump vote. My champ vote's going to go to Tillman, a U.S. soccer team, for scoring on that free kick to bury Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Yep.
And then my chump is going to be Brazil and specifically Neymar for talking smack before his penalty when the game is already out of hand in the 110th minute. And
yeah.
Then as far as tonight's game goes, I really hope that USA is up by a goal or two in the 70th minute because when Lukaku comes in for Belgium, he knows how to find the back of the net. He just doesn't have the fitness at his age to play a full 90 minutes, but 70 minutes come in, he's going to be fresh, and he's going to be looking to score.
Well, I will trust you on that assessment. you know, if we, and it's fun to say we, but if we can win this game, I can't imagine what the hype will be like, because we could end up playing Spain, right? And Spain's one of the favorites, if not the favorite. And that'd be awesome. And to just stay involved longer.
Who's Spain playing? Are they playing
Portugal? Portugal, yeah.
Well, that's a battle for the
game. It sure is.
Be like France and Belgium.
That's at 3 o'clock today.
Like Netherlands and Germany.
248-539-9797. Feedback coming in here. Champ England for holding off that push from Mexico with 10 guys most of the second half. Chump Belgium for appealing the appeal. What would you?
I would appeal it if I were. Yeah, I mean, what does it hurt to appeal?
I mean, if everything was reversed, would you want the United States to appeal?
I think everybody would want the United States to appeal if it were reversed.
I mean, look, I'm
if the roles were reversed.
Unfortunately, I'm super suspicious because of FIFA's history and because of, let's face it, this does look sketchy, okay? It does, due to previous things that have happened prior to this with the U.S. and FIFA's, the guy in charge of FIFA. But with that said, there are procedures that have gotten followed, and Belgium is following the procedure. And if they win, you know, I hope it's something that FIFA can back up, that Belgium brings up, that hadn't been thought about.
Was there an issue with the whole structure of the VAR to begin with? With, are you supposed to watch it at full speed? When you slow things, are you allowed to slow things down? Because the slow motion, the super slow motion, makes things look a heck of a lot worse than perhaps what they were in the initial play when you watch it at full speed.
Yeah, let me see if I can find the because the Athletic did a really good breakdown about how that essentially is what this comes down to. Is the argument started that the VAR, video assistant referee system, had not been implemented correctly, with an emphasis on the use of slow motion and freeze frame of the incident being at the center of these claims. So, you know, and this is why it might be very legitimate that the reason that we appealed is totally legit, that the VAR system got used incorrectly. And did get slowed down and free-framed. Like, I don't know what Belgium's response is going to be, but they seem to think they have grounds for it.
Well, I mean, let's say you're England right now. I mean, if I'm England, I'm absolutely going to appeal the Kwanzaa red card from last night.
Yeah.
Because it's a similar thing. He hits the ball first with his foot, but when you slow things down as much as you can, you see that it clears the ball, but his other leg goes up a little bit high on the shin. If you're watching it at full speed, does it look that bad? I mean, even watching it slow motion, I mean, me personally, I don't think it looks bad, but I'm not the soccer guy, so I'm taking myself out of it.
If I'd watched thousands upon thousands of red cards being handed out, I feel like my opinion might have a degree of validity.
Yeah.
But I haven't, and you haven't either. No. And I do my best to immerse myself in the reporting of people who know and pay attention to these things. Look, I think a lot of the screaming around the world is biased as well. So, you know, the problems are with leadership probably getting too close to the United States and doing some things prior to this that look sketchy in retrospect. But Champ Joey Chestnut, Chump Steve Eisenman, because Larkin is still a wing. Joey Chestnut, we got the champ. We got a bunch of votes for Joey. You know, the chumping Eisenman because he's still a wing, is that because, and I'm the reasoning behind it, is it because they want him to be traded no matter what? Or because they think he's turned down a great trade? Like, it feels to me like what Eisenman is doing, it's pretty clear that he's only going to trade him for great market value.
Yes, and as things are changing in the NHL, and you see the Philadelphia Flyers over the weekend, they signed Leo Carlson from Anaheim to an offer sheet, which would pay him $18 million a season, make him the NHL's highest paid player. Raise your hand if you thought it was going to be Leo Carlson, said nobody, but that's where that is. Doesn't that also make Dylan Larkin even more valuable? Because he comes in at under $9 million a year. He's literally half the price. It's actually on the better side of half the price. So wouldn't you think you'd get something massive for him because of what his cost is? And he's locked up for 5 years. Steve Eisenman's playing this right. Take your time with it.
You know, I'd rather have him be asking for market value and have this take some time than just take a trade.
Yeah. Just don't make a trade for trade's sake. Yeah. Don't just, oh, well, hey, we got to trade into to Minnesota or to Vegas or to Florida, because those are the three teams he asked for initially. Don't do that. Do what's best for the organization. And in the end, if it ends up meaning you trade into Minnesota and the third team gets involved and the deal looks great for Detroit, do it. But right now that deal has not materialized.
Look, your vote, we got your vote down for Eisenman. I guess I'd like to know a little bit more. Eisenman could be chumped for so many things over the last period of time. But
he gave his reason, because Larkin is still a wing. So he wants him traded.
I mean, I guess. I can guarantee you this. He could have accepted some trade offers. I guarantee you he's got trade offers that he could have accepted. Why do you think he said no? Why do you think it is?
Not good enough.
248-539-9797. We'll talk some Tigers next. We'll have the latest on Larkin at 11:30. from Elliott Freeman. It is Carson Anderson here on 97.1.
Looking to upgrade your outdoor space? Builders First Source has you covered. They've got four Metro Detroit locations. They specialize in top quality composite decking with brands that you trust like Trex, TimberTech, and AZEK. So if you're building that deck, whether you're a DIY enthusiast or you're a certified installer, their expert team is going to help you build the perfect deck that's going to stand the test of time. You can visit one of their locations today in Lapeer, Auburn Hills, Clinton Township, or Shelby Township, and you'll discover why Builders First Source is your go-to for decking. Quality, service, and unbeatable value, that's the Builders First Source promise. Search buildersfirstsource.com.
Doug Carr, Scott Anderson, 97.1, 248-539-9797. We got open lines. A bunch of champ and chump votes coming in on this Monday as we tally them up and post on our website on Tuesday who the people select as the champ and chump of the weekend. Let's go to Gary in Monroe. You're next. Hi, Gary.
You know, this is Gary in Monroe. I like to talk about the managers. The manager for the Marlins, when he pulled a guy with a perfect game, is he thinking about the fans who almost never get to sit and see a perfect game? They paid to drive there. They paid to park. They paid to get the hot dog. They pull it right off underneath the rugs. This is just not right.
The answer is no. He's not thinking about the fans at all. He's thinking about his team. I made him my chump of the week. I thought 92 pitches is ridiculous. When you have a perfect game going, keep going. He'd thrown over 100 pitches one time this year. Look, he's young. He's 23 years old. You really don't want to risk a ton, but I don't see why letting somebody go an extra inning to see if he still has it is going to ruin somebody's arm. At any point in time, that next pitch is going to get you. It doesn't matter if it's pitch three or pitch, 103.
You know, the manager should look around at the people in the stands. You know, it's just obnoxious how business like this is anymore. Why do you think he did it? Because he was not thinking of the fans. That's why he was thinking of his team. But you have to think about the fans also. Want ratings. You want to sell tickets. You want happy people.
Okay, his pitcher was coming off Tommy John. Do you know that?
No.
So that might have something to do with it. Look, I think it's important that the fans have a great experience. Because of fan interest, sports are what they are. And so I hear where you're coming from. This is a pitcher that's had Tommy John in his career. And
he is 23, but he's also, he's pitched mostly a full season. He missed close to a month, actually, almost all of June. He pitched on May 27th and then didn't pitch again until June 24th. So there's a period there where he did not. He came back and pitched 68 pitches. Then the next game was 86, and then this one ramps up to 92. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's just a ramping up process, and he's going to take care of his pitcher. And I understand that.
What's kept him out is not an arm injury this year, by the way. He had a leg injury. So it's.
But, I mean, you're not doing things for the fans. But when you've got a pitcher throw 92 and he needs six more outs, I don't see a problem letting him pitch the eighth. Now, the ironic thing is that the Marlins pitchers then proceeded to give up five runs in the bottom of the eighth inning when he was out. They scored a run in the top of the ninth, but then gave up three more in the bottom. I think of eight runs in the last two innings and damn near lost the game that they were in full control of through seven.
Does it make me cynical or heartless to think that his answer, that the manager was thinking about the game and not the fans, is exactly what the manager should be thinking about? I don't even know if he was thinking about the game, but the priority should be the player's health and the game over what the fans think. Maybe he was too cautious.
I think maybe he might have been too cautious, but it's baseball today, this is the problem a lot of people have with baseball when it comes to pitching is, hey, God forbid you get to that century mark of pitches in a game. Mm-hmm. Can't do that. Or if you do, let's watch it.
Well, and
one more batter and that's it.
I don't know this to be a fact. Okay. I don't know this to be a fact, but I suspect that caller Gary is older than us. And I suspect that caller Gary grew up in an era where Nolan Ryan was throwing 100 plus pitches every outing. And
And Mickey Lolich was going and the 300 Tigers, innings a season.
And pitchers were throwing like 15 complete games in a year and more than that, sure.
But, 30 complete games in a year.
Yeah, but it was just, it was the way it was. And
It was a different era. And so that's the thing. It's what I'm saying. Today's baseball is different.
Assume that Gary grew up in that era, but. Feedback coming in. Noah says FIFA is one of the most corrupt organizations in the world. I'm not surprised they had a change of heart after the host nation's government puts in a call. Well, that's what the rest of the world is screaming. And this could have been, and I, you know, I'm trying to follow this as best I can. And the story in The Athletic really laid it out that, first of all, some of the foremost people with USA Soccer are saying, look, the implication that's anything other than our, us following an appeals process is overstated. That's one. And two is, they gave their reasoning. They said the VAR was slowed down and stopped, which it shouldn't be when assessing a red card.
It would behoove FIFA at this point to come out publicly and say, look, here's the sequence of events that happened. We received an official appeal from Team USA on Thursday afternoon or whatever it was. Upon looking at and reviewing it, we decided to overturn it. And made the announcement yesterday. The conversation that was had with any politician was completely ancillary to this and had no effect on this. We made our decision after it was originally, you know, appealed by the team.
Let's go to Kurt in Chesterfield. You're next. Hello, Kurt.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How you doing?
What's up?
I wanted to chime in real quick because I heard you talking about this Yuri Perez thing. I was actually watching the game yesterday because I had seen, obviously, he was perfect through seven. I think it was 92 pitches.
Yep.
And I get it. I know he came out. He was just coming off surgery. But I feel like it's pretty telling, first of all, when the road fans are booing you, not because you're up 8-0, but because you pulled your pitcher with a perfect game going into the eighth inning. And you could tell, so typically you do things, you look at the score, 8-0, you assume you're going to win that game from a managerial standpoint. It flipped the entire momentum of the game, too, because the A's, I think the A's were shocked themselves that they just pulled this guy with a perfect game through seven innings. The relief pitcher came in, five earned runs, no outs. They ended up, it was a 9-8 game. I mean, it came down to the last out. So not only does it speak to pulling, I mean, we're talking about history here, not a no-hitter. Those happen from time to time. You'll see a team no-hitter or something like that. How many perfect games have there been, guys? What, under 20? Somewhere around there?
Not many.
I couldn't disagree more with the manager's decision. I was actually rooting for them to lose the game after that happened. That's how disappointed
Kurt,
I was.
The Athletic fans are the ones that care the absolute least about his physical well-being.
Correct.
So them booing him, they don't care if the guy's coming off Tommy John a couple years ago. They don't care if he's on a pitch count.
Let me ask you this. Let me put you in the shoes then. If you were at a Tigers game, let's say, I don't know, we're playing the Pirates, okay?
Yep.
Let's say Skeens was coming off an injury.
Yep.
And maybe it's even vice versa. Maybe if it's in Pittsburgh in this scenario, right? Because you're care about your guy. If you're a Pirates fan, and you've sat there through seven innings, you know, you pretty much suffered at a franchise for how many years
Let's
now?
Let's just do it with Jackson
Job.
Your
manager pulls schemes.
Let's do it with Jackson Job.
Seven innings with a perfect game.
If Jackson Job is on a pitch count when he comes back and he's got a perfect game through seven innings, do you want him to stay in there coming off an injury?
I do.
Okay, well, I guess I don't. This is why I say, maybe I'm heartless. Maybe I've been out of the fan game for too long. I don't want Jackson Job pushing it. A few starts into his, you know, his return from an injury.
I guess I have a hard time thinking that, you know, going another, at least giving him the next inning is pushing it. But I don't know. I don't know what's going on back there, what the conversation was with Yuri Perez. If manager talked to him and he's like, yeah, I know I'm running out of gas here. How's the arm feel? It feels a little rubbery or what? Who knows what the conversation was?
But I'd be disappointed as a fan, yes. But I think I would understand why a manager might be treating a young pitcher as carefully as possible. I don't need this kid to win the game. I don't think I can preserve him, and we need him around for a long time. I don't know. I mean, I guess
it's also a Marlins team that is competing for the National League East right now. You know, it looked like Atlanta had it running away. Then Atlanta has just turned into Hmong lately, and the Marlins are now just 4.5 games back in that division. Their number one thing is to win the game.
Yeah.
Absolutely to win the game. That being said, I would have left them in for another inning. You're playing at Oakland. Well, it's not even Oakland, whoever, Oklamento or whatever it is. Yeah. There's less than 9,000 people at a stadium there to watch
I'm surprised this is as much of an issue just because the manager's job is not to preserve the perfect. He's to win the game and preserve the pitcher. The perfect game is history, and yes, it sucks. But if you leave a pitcher out there, and they get hurt going after a perfect game. I mean, I don't know.
You know what? Fans would be forgiving of that.
I'm not sure they would.
I think they'd be forgiving of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really do. Wow. I think fans would be forgiving of that because
if that's the case, I'm completely out of touch. I just think of Jackson Jobe coming back. Should they push Jackson Jobe to get a perfect game?
But this wasn't his third outing of the season.
No, it wasn't.
All right, this guy's made a bunch of starts this year. As I mentioned, he missed most of June, but as you pointed out, it's because of a leg injury, not an arm injury. Mm-hmm. He had thrown over 100 pitches in a game already this year. He'd thrown well over 90 pitches, more than a half dozen times this season. But it all comes down to the conversation the pitcher has with the manager. How do you feel?
Here's some feedback. His pitcher was only in his third game after coming off an injury. The manager was right. That's from Rick and Warren.
It wasn't an arm injury.
It wasn't, but the injury still could have been bothering him. He's right. He shouldn't have pulled him. It'd have been different if you had at least 95 pitches through six innings, but that was through seven. He could have went batter by batter. Next text, these same fans will be howling if the guy gets hurt going for the perfect game. 248-539-9797. Let's go to Ryan downriver. You're next. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to give my champ and chump for the day, for the week. So my champ, the Mud Hens, man, I don't know if you've watched any of their games, but they're a heck of a ball team. And they got Max Anderson down there, who's a baller. Couple other kids I can't remember their name, but they won it in the bottom of the ninth on a walk-off. Great game on the 4th of July. Me and the boys went. It was awesome. Hotter than heck, but we had a blast. We really did. And then they had a fireworks display. It was probably the best fireworks display I've seen in my entire life. It was awesome.
Better than Cleveland? I don't know if you heard that guy trash Cleveland's fireworks earlier, but...
Yeah, no, I heard that. Good call. And then my chump, I guess the weather. We had a bad storm the other day. Knocked a couple of trees down in my backyard. Had to call a tree service out here. Actually, they were able to come out on the 4th, so I wish I knew the name of the tree service, but we could champ them too. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, so there you go.
Customer service, man. Thanks. When you get good customer service in America in 2026, behold. Value those people and those companies.
I'm gonna make an effort to follow Toledo a little bit now.
You are gonna make an effort, Gator, who's always all over minor league box scores, including an infatuation right now with Tulsa of
future Detroit Tigers.
All right, straight ahead, the latest on Larkin from an NHL insider. That is next here on 97.1.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's been a while since we've done a Dylan Larkin Trade Center, spelled CNTRE, Blitz Thingy News Desk update. And here is the very latest from Elliot Friedman, NHL insider, Canadian sports writer from the 32 Thoughts podcast, worked for CBC's Hockey Night in Canada, NHL Network, Sportsnet, et cetera, talking about the Red Wings and Dylan Larkin and the fact that Dylan Larkin's price tag is not going down. Okay, Gator, good.
Yes.
Good. If you take a look at the top three Red Wing contracts, Larkin, Sider, and Raymond, all making between $8.7 and $8.075 million, considering the money that's getting thrown around, these contracts which are all for a long time, at least 5 years, they seem like bargains.
Well, they are bargains. In the Larkin situation, he's flat out a bargain. Not only is he a bargain on the salary cap, he's an even bigger bargain in real money because the team takes him on. Part of the contract was already front-loaded. So you're actually not paying him 8.75 a year. You're paying him far less. But for cap purposes, it's 8.75. Real money purposes, it's less. Something the Red Wings we're going to have to monitor in this offseason here is Simon Edvinson. He's a restricted free agent. And now that Philadelphia has gone out and thrown that restricted free agent contract at Leo Carlson for $18 million a season, you got to start looking at your own restricted free agents, make sure they don't get poached. I think there's a sense of urgency to get a deal done with Simon Edvinson. But as far as Dylan Larkin's concerned, I think this is great news.
Well, and it brings up something that I've been talking about since day one, and that is I'm still not 100% convinced that anybody is going to meet Yzerman's asking price. And I feel like the possibility of Larkin coming back, as uncomfortable as it might be, and with all the fence mending in the world that would need to take place, I still think it's a possibility. Elliot Friedman talked about it. I completely agree with him. No trade is better than a bad trade. And then sort it out, man. It's going to be uncomfortable. But you know what, Gator? Have you ever seen a couple get divorced and then get remarried?
Yes.
It happens. It happens.
Doesn't mean it sticks the second time around, but I've seen it happen. And then end poorly right after that. But yeah. yes, I have.
Just saying.
I have always been of the belief that I think this gets done and he gets traded. However, in my heart, I don't want Dylan Larkin to go. I want there to be a reconciliation. And I want there to be a reconciliation because Yzerman is working on everything else to make this team better. And he's found a way to lure some or find a trade with some other team to get a big player back without having to move Larkin in the first place. And then he can present that to Dylan in his camp might come back to Yzerman or vice versa and try to find a way to make this work and craft this speech and, you know, a statement that's going to make both sides look good. Like the Werenski situation last week where both Columbus and Zach's camp came together. They crafted out a statement and Wentz, it actually made me feel like, oh, I can deal with that. Right. There was a misunderstanding. Look, I love being here. I love the fans, love the team, the organization. Something like that, whatever happens, happens. I don't think that's going to happen, but there is room for it to happen. But I would like to see the Red Wings get aggressive and bring somebody else here that has nothing to do with Dylan Larkin to make this team look good and look even better if you keep Dylan Larkin.
Upgrade the roster to make Larkin happy. I mean, and who would be against that?
Right.
I mean, I think some people have burned the bridge and say, I don't want any part of Dylan Larkin. I've gone from 20% to 45%. To 50%. I think it's a flip of the coin that he is back. Now, what do these percentages mean that I'm putting on this? They mean nothing. But I think I am open to the idea that this is just the reality that they may have to navigate a player that asked, the captain that asked for a trade that he couldn't trade because nobody would meet the asking price. And by nobody, I mean anybody on what appears to be a 4 to 5 team list that Larkin has approved. And no, I agree firmly, and I think everybody would. No trade is better than a bad trade. More from Elliot Friedman. All right, so given recent developments, what is the asking price now for Dylan Larkin? I find it actually kind of amusing, Scott, when I see on social media that when the report got out there that the Red Wings were interested in Matt Boldy from the Wild, that the Wild side was scoffing at that. And I'm like, okay, dude, we're not asking you for Boldy. You're asking us for Larkin.
Right, exactly. Like, if you have to find some way where the players work. And I think 100% of your Steve Yzerman, you're trying to get the best player or players you can for this giant trade chip that you have. And in some ways, you know, if you just look player by player, if you look at Larkin to Robertson, for instance, Jason Robertson from Dallas, who's a restricted free agent and looks like they're going to arbitration there. If you look at those players straight up, Robertson has had a nicer career. He's had a 100-point season. He's a guy who scored 40 goals in a year. And those are things Larkin hasn't done. But he's going to cost nearly twice as much. Does that kind of even things out? I mean, like initially you're probably thinking, oh, well, to get Robertson, if you're to trade Larkin, you have to get Larkin and a first round pick to get Robertson. Well, wait a minute, not necessarily, because you have to take the money into account. You can get another player because you traded for Dylan Larkin because he's half the cost. So, yeah, the Red Wings are going to be out there looking for a stud player in return, as they should.
All right, and finally, what does all this mean for Alex DeBrincat? Is there any impact on his future in Detroit going into the final year of his contract? Okay, with him under contract for one more year, I'm not sure I see a possibility of them moving DeBrincat and also keeping Larkin happy. Like, if they are moving towards, we're not getting the offers, and they're just, I don't think DeBrincat is even, should be on the market in any way whatsoever, just because you're going to have to, one of the reasons, nobody's mad, if Larkin's full motivation is he just wants the Red Wings to be competitors and he doesn't think they're going to get there, and then all of this, at the end of all this, it forces Yzerman to make an aggressive move that makes him better, we can all get over it and just be happy with a better hockey team.
Yeah, I don't want to move Alex DeBrincat. I think he is everything that fans love about hockey. And this guy is the underdog, right? He's undersized but plays way bigger than what he is. He puts the puck in the net. He is gritty. He is determined. He does all the little things. Love Alex DeBrincat. I don't want to see this guy go. I think the Red Wings need to do something bold. We've said it for a while, the Jason Robertson stuff that was out there. We would love to see them make an effort to try to get Jason Robertson, and maybe they have made that effort. Who knows? Is that all tied only to money? We'll find out. But this move that the Flyers made over the weekend to acquire Leo Carlson from the Ducks, and Leo Carlson, young player in this league, had just finished a season, point-a-game season with Anaheim. And they've signed him to an offer sheet for $18 million a season. Leo Carlson now will be the highest paid player in the NHL. There are other restricted free agents out there where the prize going the other way ends up being 4 first round draft picks if you sign one of these top restricted free agents. Well, remember the name Connor Bedard?
Mm-hmm.
Number one player taken the draft a few years ago to Chicago, played right away as an 18-year-old. Everyone was saying, oh, he's the next big thing, the next big thing, and looks like he's going to be the next big thing. Last year, he had a little bit of a breakout in his third season in the league. He had a 30-goal season, his high. He had 45 assists, 75 points in 69 games, all highs. Would you give up 4 first-round picks to sign Connor Bedard to a deal that's going to pay him, say, $15 million or $14 million a season? Now, would Chicago match it? They damn well should. But I'd love to see the Red Wings get aggressive in and go get a guy, a young center, much like what Philadelphia's trying to do here. I do the same thing for the Red Wings. It's Connor Bedard. He's got nobody to play with there. He's playing with Tyler Bertuzzi, and that's it. He comes to Detroit and plays with a couple of the young wingers we have here, or plays with Alex DeBrincat? Good God. Let's watch the points go up. I'd love to have Connor Bedard. Give up 4 first-round picks? Wouldn't think twice about it.
And again, all that thanks to Elliot Freeman and the 32 Thoughts podcast, the latest Dylan Larkin Trade Center News Aggregate Blitz Thingy News Desk. It is Carson Anderson here on 97.1.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Carson Anderson, 97.1. Got the boss in here arguing red cards. And on his way out, I said, hey, Jimmy, how many soccer games have you watched in your entire life before last night? Because he was arguing a red card in the game last night. He said, I don't know, 15, 10.
Wait, he watches his girls play, though.
Watches his girls play, yeah. And that's,
I would argue that it's,
well, very comparable in many ways to World Cup soccer. 248-539-9797.
Just a bit of slightly breaking news in the world of professional football.
Yeah.
The Commanders are signing free agent cornerback Rasul Douglas to a one-year deal per Adam Schefter. I only bring that up because the Terrion Arnold situation, Rasul Douglas was one of those people listed as potential target for the Detroit Lions, and now he is off the board.
Yeah, look, sometimes I wonder why the Lions, and I'm a Brad Holmes guy, but and Brad Holmes' work, some of his work of late has not impressed me. But I don't have an expectation, unrealistic, it got to be perfect. You're going to do some things that don't work. I do find it curious that they haven't been more aggressive in the market for another starting corner. Rasul Douglas, I mean, maybe they just simply tell you, well, we didn't sign him because he sucks. That might be their evaluation of him as a player. Or we didn't sign him because we think we can get this player when they get cut because we already see the roster crunch going on in New Orleans at the corner spot. I just use New Orleans as an example, but teams are always thinking about cut candidates. They've got too many corners. They can't afford them all. Somebody's going to get cut, and we like that guy better than we like the pool of players that might be available there better than Rasul Douglas, but that's what the best GM should be doing. Let's go to Crusher in White Lake. Hello, Crusher.
Greetings, gents.
What's up?
Well, to carry on the Larkin thing, I had a couple points. One, the Larkin situation is not the same as Werenski. Werenski is not asking to bail out of town. He just said he won't sign again. He didn't burn too many bridges with that, so there's that. And as far as signing Bedard to an RFA, to a contract, I would wait till next year when Celebrini from San Jose is available. You can drop $20, $22 million on that guy. Because San Jose has given some of the weirdest contracts out this offseason to these defensemen that are just mind-blowing. I don't know if they'd have enough money to cover it.
So it's interesting. You know, the question becomes, do you run into a situation where you can't afford to wait to next year? I get where you're coming from. I think there are probably better moves to be made down the road. But they kind of have to do something now. And so I understand. Are you willing to be patient with another year of... If they can't move Larkin and they don't do anything significant, are you willing to be patient?
If you know they signed a couple good role players this offseason and blah blah blah, but you know if Larkin sticks around, he's going to have to play whether he likes it or not. Or you know I know it's going to be uncomfortable, but what else? What are your options? And I still think they will be, even though they lost Kane, you know, with the guys they signed, they'll be tougher. And they'll get, you know, they'll get goal replacement probably from, what's the guy's name they signed from Boston?
Oh, yeah, Arvidsson.
The winger, yeah.
Arvidsson.
So, you know, it's and the Atlantic Division is stacked. I mean, for God's sake. You know, who are they going to, even if they were able to make the playoffs, who are they going to beat out? I mean, Florida's going to bounce back, Toronto, you know, Boston's always Boston. They're scratching and clawing.
The only thing that happens is if they make a significant upgrade and or if some of their young players finally start to blossom. And what I mean by that is think about the impact Kevin McGonigal's had on the Tigers. And, you know, we heard about him for a while. I think even the most realistic expectations, he has exceeded them. And there has been, it seems like, a reluctance to part with young Red Wings. It would be awesome, absolutely awesome, to find out the reason why.
Yeah, it would be. It would be great. I mean, they just had their developmental camp. Mm-hmm. And look, not all the young players are there, but the players were drafted basically over the last couple of years were there. And you start to get a little bit more charged up. Hey, Carter Bear was there. Max Plant was there. Max Plant's brother was just drafted, was there. Hey, here's the new guy they just took in the first round, Hurlburt. And, you know, they do have some talent, but it's nothing we've seen and nothing we're going to see in this upcoming season either, which is hard to, you know, kind of, we're constantly waiting. And then the guys that will get a chance this year, likely I'm going to guess Nate Danielson will make the roster this year.
Yep.
If Sandin Pelica has another great chance of making the roster this year. Brandzeg Nygaard has another great chance of making the roster this year. unless they're part of a trade of some kind.
Yep. I mean, look, I'm not expecting that. There's a reason why I've kind of given up, but I've been wrong before. I've been wrong about hockey more than some other sports, so I'm good with being wrong here. And some of those young guys pay dividends, and they start to look like a team that might have a future with affordable high-end players on the contract. Remember, we're reacting to what Elliot Freeman said, and probably I think the most interesting thing he said was sort of acknowledging that, look, this Yzerman deal or this Larkin deal, Yzerman might not be able to pull off a Larkin deal that makes sense for him, in which case, as he said, no trade is better than a bad trade.
I'm a little torn when it comes to the idea of the restricted free agent and signing one of these guys to offer sheet. Mm-hmm. I advocate doing it for a couple guys, all right? But at the same time, I'd feel awful if we had that player, let's say it was, you know, Lucas Raymond wasn't locked up and some team decided they were going to lure him away with an offer sheet. And the Red Wings had to match it and clearly overpaying, like, wow, that's a lot of money, but we got to hang on to our guy. I'm just torn by what I really, really want. And yet what I want is the Red Wings to be better. So I do want them to go after it. But at the same time, I'm looking at it seeing the other way. I would hate for that to happen to one of our teams. I think one of the things that makes the league great is that this happens so infrequently.
Are you saying you'd feel guilty taking somebody else's player?
Kind of.
What the hell's wrong with you?
I think.
What do you mean?
To lose a guy 3 years into the career?
It's the rules.
I know. And it typically doesn't happen.
It sucks for them.
My whole point is it doesn't happen often, right? I mean, how many times have we seen players signed to offer sheets over the last 20 years?
Well, yeah, I can't imagine that is.
Even as a fan, you get invested in young players. And when that young player, all of a sudden, he gets sent away because somebody else outbid
100%. But you're feeling bad for other teams' fans?
Well, therein lies the rub. I'm trying to balance it. As I'm advocating for the Red Wings to go out there and do the same thing, go sign Connor Bedard to an offer sheet.
Yeah, it's not. That is not part of my calculus whatsoever.
I feel a little guilty doing it.
Do you?
A little bit.
I'm going to tell you, you're too soft to be a GM. You need to be have more killer instincts.
I never said I wanted to be a GM.
Well, that's true. 248-539-9797, phone calls, feedback, and here is a bunch of feedback. I think because of Larkin's contract, we need to add another piece that will make him happy and want to stay. His contract allows us to overpay someone else into the future. Maybe figure out how Bedard, the same contract Carlson got, or trade for the D-man from Columbus. Well, that's not happening, but.
Let's say all you do is sign Bedard to the offer sheet, and mm-hmm. Chicago doesn't match. And Connor Bedard becomes a Red Wing, yeah. And it costs you 4 first-round picks. Oh, well.
Yep.
And would that be something where Dylan Larkin looks at now and says, oh, wait a minute, we just got our number two, we got our center, who's I can stay in my number two role, he can go to number one.
If the team improved and Larkin came back, sure, the fans would be upset and probably boo a little bit, but if the team was better and started to win, all would be forgiven.
I already like the moves they made. I really like the Kolesar acquisition. Mm-hmm. I mean, adds all the types of toughness that you want for this team. The bottom six forwards, he's going to be awfully difficult to play against. Arvidsson does little things, stays in front of the net, contributes on the power play. 18 5-on-5 goals last year. There's a lot to like with that. Those are two really good additions. Like, if the team were coming back next year and you added those two guys, I'd think, okay, those are two guys probably make a difference, might get you into the playoffs. Unfortunately, now we're in a situation where it's not going to be the same team likely because Larkin's going to go.
248-539-9797, reacting to Elliot Freeman saying, yeah, he might have to come back to Detroit. It is Carson Anderson on a Monday, 97.